Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 140 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 147 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Okay, before we get to 208, as usual, we are doing your listener feedback for 207, Faith. First up is Cindy.
Hi, this is Cindy from Maryland. I just wanted to give my input on Faith. Totally heartbreaking. I was pretty much in tears the whole way through. I know a lot of people are talking about the stuff with Fergus. I think it was necessary. We had to see why Jamie would break his word, because he doesn't break his word. And the connection that Jamie and Claire has with this boy is just amazing. And it was important that we see it. When Louise showed up and took the baby from Claire, I think that was that, and when Claire bowed to Magnus, were probably my two absolute favorite things, other than the scene at the end with Jamie, where they were at the gravestone. Just very powerful, and Tony Garcia completely wrote the crap out of this episode. And I think if Claire or if Kate does not get some sort of award for this, they are completely out of their mind, because she killed it. Thank you. Have a good day.
100%, Cindy.
I know. Okay. Back to Fergus. I think the scene was tastefully done. I'm not saying it was like grotesque or like too much. I'm just saying, as me as a person, I don't like watching that kind of stuff. So it was very difficult to watch. And I do think that it could have been just as effective with just him retelling the story. But...
Oh, of the Fergus thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do think it could have been just as effective. That being said, I think that they dealt with it tastefully. I just personally don't like to watch it.
Next up is Jenny S.
Hello, this is Jenny from Salt Lake City, Utah, with my thoughts on episode 207. First of all, I love that Claire is honest with Jamie about sleeping with the king. It's a deviation from the books that I really prefer. I like the fact that they maintain that honesty between the two of them. I think that's really important. So I love that. And speaking of the king, I just love the scene in the star room. I think you guys are mistaken about there being occult symbols. King Louis was really into astrology and astronomy and even magic. I think he did distinguish between dark arts and other mystical wonders of the universe. Perhaps Claire picked up on this, which is why she admitted to being a witch who practices white magic. After all, he did value the opinion of La Dame Blanche to begin with. And the moment that her stone changed color was to die for. Thanks, ladies, for doing what you do.
That was pretty cool, Jenny. Yeah, that stone.
Oh, I don't even know what to say. That was total CGI, but... Oh my gosh, I couldn't have been better.
If a stone like that exists, I want it.
No, Summer wants the one after I get one.
What does that mean?
There are two. Oh, I get it first. I'm just saying, I get it
Look,
at first.
I'm done with your hand-me-downs, chick. I'm done.
Chick? That's new. Okay, so what was the other one? Oh, that we got potentially wrong. The occult symbols? Well, I think I said he's definitely interested because he... had that place there. He's into it. He knows stuff. There's a certain line, I think I agree, that he would not cross. He definitely saw a difference between astrology and certain things and then blacker arts. And yes, there was a distinction made between the dark arts and being a white witch. But I still think it was a little interesting. Next up is Gohar.
Hi, Summer and Ginger. This is Gohar. I called in before and you guys asked me where I'm from. I'm from Pakistan, but I live in Istanbul. My thoughts about the show. I cried for this while watching this episode, and I never cry while watching anything emotional. So that deeply moved me. It was very difficult to watch. which made me think about how my views would change as I get older. I'm only 21 now. I was wondering, as I keep growing, will I appreciate more or less? I'd like to know what you guys went through. I think you've read the books when they came out. So has that changed? Have you appreciated more or less of the books as you've grown older? My second thought about this episode was the music. I agree with you guys that he captured the sound of crying, but for me it also felt like going on with life while you're being sad. It's a very beautiful piece of music. Also, my last thought was the way Jamie's eyes light up when he hears, "Let's go back to Scotland."
Oh, God, I agree. Not only did I think Summer's description was apt, I also think it was similarly weird. I like the way you said it, not just what you said, but someone else commented on it before I, you know, kind of remembered, oh, that's right. Is that when you said that it sounded like he scored the sound of someone crying. As you said that, your voice totally broke.
Oh, it totally.
And did. It was perfection. So I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And I've read probably in tweets, people comment on that. And so many people love it. Yeah, totally. Totally.
So I would just like to say to our 21-year-old friend.
Aw, bless you.
I started reading these books when I was 20. I think 20 or I don't know, 19 or 20. And I loved the books. And I think I definitely get something different out of them now because I just have more life experiences than I did when I first started reading the book. And I almost feel like as I keep rereading the series, I keep kind of meeting up with Claire in different points in her life where I'm like, oh, well, when I first started reading it, I was even younger than Claire when she first started the books. And then, you know, it jumps forward and she's in later and later in life. And I'm still not caught up with older Claire, but I'm getting there. And I feel like I have such a wider range of emotions I've experienced and experiences in my life that I've experienced that I feel like I can connect even more with the books now. Now, granted, I have not time traveled, nor have I done half of the things that Claire has done, but I do know that it definitely touches me in different places. That sounds wrong. Than it used to.
I'm glad I didn't have to pop in there. You did it for me.
That's what she said.
Next up is Karen T.
Hello, Ginger and Summer. It's Karen from Pennsylvania. Wanted to call and thank you guys for your touching podcast on episode 207, Faith. You guys really did quite a good job. Thank you so much for that. And I wanted to just mention that Summer, when she talked about the faith theme sounding like tears falling, that's when I started crying. When I actually had tears falling was when that scene as Claire is getting out of the carriage, that's that moment. And it was the theme that Bear had done so beautifully that made that happen. And it also later in your podcast, Ginger mentioned her losing her dog. And just these things reminded me of a time. I'm a veterinarian, and one time I put an older woman's dog to sleep. I unfortunately have to do that a lot, but it's a woman I'd never met before. She was alone and had this beautiful box that she had brought. And as I laid the dog in this box, she asked me, and she said, "Have you ever had your heart hurt?" And I usually keep it together because I kind of have to, but in that moment I couldn't. It was just beautiful how she expressed her emotion and we cried together. And it made me think of that when you guys, listening to your podcast, that's what the faith theme sounded like a heart that's hurting, you know, with your tears falling. So thank you guys for doing such a good job with that, and I'll talk to you again.
I still can't even think about that song, about his melody without choking up. Like, it's awful. Like, if I hear the music, it was originally when I saw it in the context, but I can't even think about the music now without getting a little choky in my throaty.
You mean that music?
Stop it. Stop it. I'm gonna think dog poop.
I just whipped it out, so that was not very nice of me.
Naughty. Put it away
now. Isn't that the song?
No, it's give it away.
Was that 90s rap?
No, it was the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, but 90s. Karen, yes, with me and my flights of fancy. That's not really the right word, but with me and my love for animals. Not that Summer doesn't like animals. She likes them just fine, but I'm a little obsessed with my monkey babies. Yeah, I was pre-vet for a number of years, and I have the utmost respect for veterinarians, especially with, it's a blessing to be able to offer that service, but I know it's very hard. I've worked with a lot of vets and been around that, and it's even when the situation calls for it and it's a kind thing, a kindness, it is still hard from what I've observed, and it's hard to be around. But yeah, so thank you. Thank you very much for that.
And I just want to clarify that I do love animals.
I said you liked them.
I just had the best cat in the world and I can't replace him, so I don't want to go back there. So I'll just play with all your cats. It's fine.
Next up is Michael.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas, to talk about episode 207. When I was young, I didn't really have emotional connections to scenes from a TV show or a movie. That came later in life, after I became a father, actually. I remember when I was young and when I was a kid and watching The Sound of Music. It came on every year over Thanksgiving weekend, and I enjoyed the movie, the show. When I watched it for the first time with my daughters, it's one of the first times I recall getting misty-eyed, and that was during the scene when a Gaylord comes into the room and his children are singing, and then he joins them, pulls out the guitar, and sings Edelweiss. This episode of Outlander, I had more than a couple of misty-eyed moments. I really like how this episode began with a title card in 1954. It was a ray of sunshine with Claire and Brianna, a ray of sunshine before the storm. The scene in this episode of Outlander that had the biggest impact on me was towards the end when Claire was telling Jamie about Faith when we had the flashback to the hospital, and when Louise convinced Claire to give up the baby, and when I was watching it for the first time, I could feel a tear gently sliding down my cheek. The moment from your podcast that touched me the most was when you were describing Claire's return from the hospital and Claire getting out of the carriage, and how it was the biggest impact on Summer, and when she talked about Bear's score being like someone crying. Now that Claire and Jamie are returning to Scotland and leaving Paris, we can probably say that this scene was the very last time we'll see them going back to
Jared's house.
Oh my God. I knew that was coming. Thank God.
Oh my God. That was awesome. But it scared the shit out of me. I was like, what the fuck? What was that?
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe he did that. He loved it, but.
Did you not read the email that it came
with? I just saw it said, one of you may like it or not.
Of course, I'm the one who didn't.
But. I didn't. I had no idea what he was.
Now you know.
This is so mad that someone used our own recording to come back to us. That's pretty awesome, though. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That. I was like, wait, who's squeaking in my ear?
You. Now you know what it's like to be me.
But you know it's coming if there's something about Jared. I had no clue that was coming. Oh my gosh, that was not kind.
See, but that's why he had to send it via email and he couldn't speak pipe and or Skype message it because he edited in.
Michael, I lost my shiz with that. He scared me. He startled me. I literally took my headphones and like threw them down. I threw my glasses across the room. Really couldn't figure out what's that. And then I realized you were quoting us back to us, or me back to me.
I feel like part of me, as much as I was sad to hear that happen to me again, part of me thinks that you may have been the one to finally get through to Ginger just how annoying the Jared singing was. So you may have actually cured her. So thank you, Michael.
I haven't cured her. We haven't done it for weeks. since I was in Scotland and edited the heck out of that episode. I haven't dropped one Jared since
then.
There's
a reason for that.
That's what I'm trying to say. Cured me. There's no cure. I was already cured. Except, well, now there's no excuse for me to use it because we're not in Paris anymore.
That's the whole point.
Oh, Lord. You definitely win the surprise award. No one's ever sent us a soundbite of ourselves. And you startle me so much. It's not even funny. I literally, like,
She's still laughing.
What is that? What is that noise? I'm like, oh, that was me. I just got, the way it sounded, like, okay, I know that was me. But the difference of the screech followed by the house. I think, oh God, this is taking too long. Okay. So Michael, you know, 10 points, bonus points. Oh my gosh. Next up is Keisha. I don't know if anybody can top that.
Hello, Ginger. So this is Keisha from Odenton, Maryland. Just leaving listener feedback, episode 207 Faith. That episode was very heavy. As a book writer, I knew it was coming. It was very hard to pull away. Katrina was stellar. My husband is not a TV watcher or a book reader, but he just happened to be in the room. I think I fell asleep on it on the 9 o'clock hour here on the East Coast. And his comments were, when the cunt was about to drink the poison, he was like, he just said, F you, F you, and F you. That was so on point because, for lack of a better word, that's what he said. Because he knew it was going down. And Stanley Weber's death scene was one of the good ones. I'm ready to get back to Scotland. Let's go to Lollybrock. Have a good one. Thanks so much.
Keisha, the first thing I thought of when you're quoting your husband saying, F you, F you, and F you, and F you, I thought of Oprah.
You get a car and you get a car.
And you get effed and you get effed and you get effed. So I'm like, oh, that's... Sorry. Summer got it right away. I'm glad. But that made me laugh. So good.
No, I thought Stanley Weber was brilliant in that scene.
I just thought he looked... I mean, He acted well. He made you feel a little pity for him at least.
But I wouldn't have hated it if they'd knocked that wig off his head. If he could have gone to his death in his natural hair, I would have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Summer. Next is Susan.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Susan calling from Alexandria, Virginia. I'm a book reader, 207. I totally loved it. I just got finished listening to your podcast and I wanted to put in my own thoughts. Anyway, I loved the beginning. The girl with the curly hair, I won't say her name, but anyway, I loved how she sort of began the episode and then Faith Graves ended the episode. I just thought that was a really cool juxtaposition. I'm sure that, you know, the people who are not book readers might be wondering, like, what the heck? I guess they did that on purpose. Anyway, so I just thought Katrina was so good during the fever moments, you know, especially when she was realizing that Faith is gone. I thought she was so, so good being hysterical. I thought the Star Chamber was cool. I mean, except for Faré, I wasn't sure if, I couldn't remember if he was there in the book or not, but I thought that's seemed to follow the book more or less. I thought it was good. You know, and I guess my main comment that I thought was so great was at the end when Claire is telling him that she slept with the king to buy his freedom. You know, and in the series, Jamie's okay with that. And I just thought that was such a good adaptation. You know, him comparing it to how he had to, you know, give himself to Randall in order to buy her freedom. At the end of the first book, I just thought the grasp, the nettle chapter in Dragonfly and Amber, like when they go up to that rock cliff and he's just so furious with her for sleeping with the king. And I always thought his anger for an act that saved his life was just not believable. Anyway, so I thought that him being okay with it and seeing it kind of as similar to what he had to do, I just thought that was a really good adaptation, you know, and then the end with her holding Faith as a baby and then the part in the cemetery, you know, when they're sort of saying goodbye to her, I just I just thought that was so touching. I have two young girls myself, and, you know, your mind just can't help but, you know, go there with your own family. So I thought it was very, very well done. But I love your podcast. I'm sorry if I went over 90 seconds, but thanks so much. Take care. Bye.
So one thing that I meant to say last week that I forgot to say was about the title card, how the title card where we had Claire with the child. And
the child.
And I had a lot of people kind of say, I don't know why they did that. What's, you know, well, I don't really know why they did that. But in my brain, I feel like it was kind of an attempt to give us all a little hope before they took away our faith.
I heard that.
Well, it's a very hopeful scene.
Except
because
that it's the 50s. And we already know when she goes back in episode one in the 40s, she's got no belly.
I know. Well, we clearly know the time frame. I'm just saying it's to give us all hope that even though this horrible nonsense is about to happen, that there's something that's good that's going to come from this whole thing. That it's not, this is not the end.
That Jamie won't be around for.
See, you always got to turn it dark. Why you got to turn
not
it dark?
Dark? It's the 20th century. He doesn't, that we know of, travel.
Yeah, but you, this is you just trying to like poop on any glimmer of sunlight that I could bring to the room. I'm like, I'm trying to give you a silver lining and you're pointing out a shadow.
Our next piece of listener feedback comes from Jay.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Jay. On Twitter, I'm Geekinista. So I'm finally calling in, first time, and I'm a book reader, but also enjoying the show. I just wanted to say how I really enjoyed your description of the song. You said the song sounded like tears. I think that's absolutely spot on. I can't even think of a better way to put it. Bear was just amazing. The scene with Claire coming home from the carriage, the curtsy to Magnus is his name. Oh, that was just amazing. It showed so much respect. You know, he went above and beyond stepping in for Jamie and Murtaugh when they couldn't be there with Claire. And what he did was just amazing. And that's where my ugly crying started. Also, the scene in the Star Room, I have to say it was my least favorite. It was kind of like a bad guy unveiling in a Scooby-Doo plot. Not that the acting was bad. It just seemed so odd. But I suppose you could say it was kind of like in keeping with The Wizard of Oz, peeling back the curtain for something that wasn't real. And wondering, you know, if maybe the blue and the orange was also a nod in some ways to The Wizard of Oz, because Dorothy did have a blue dress on during that whole movie. And she was following maybe not an orange brick road, but it was yellow. Also the scene where Claire's telling Jamie about the baby and the way it was edited was just absolutely beautiful. It was almost as if Jamie was in the room there watching them. And again, the ugly crying ensued. And I'm not a person who cries unless the dog dies. So that was an amazing feat. So anyway, that's my summary. Hope it was 90 seconds and nice to hear from you ladies. Talk to you later. Bye.
You know, I've been hearing that a lot from people online and everywhere else and people
the
that I know in real life. No, that's the first time I've heard that.
That was funny.
But how everyone who is so affected by this episode, they all say, I don't cry. Oh, I don't cry at TV. You know, TV, I'm not an emotional person. You know, I'm not
a robot.
That's me. But I would say that I do cry at TV, though. But, you know, some TV. Sometimes I feel like I need that emotional outlet. So I I find TV that will make me cry just a little bit. But for sure, this has been a very effective episode. It was so well done, well written, all of the above, that it is affecting people, even people who say they only cry for dogs. So I only cry when dogs die. And I've heard that too. Old Yeller still gets me.
Oh gosh. Old Yeller, Charlotte's Web. Those are ugly cries. Well, Charlotte's Web, I haven't watched in so long. It may not be an ugly cry. But when animals die, that's ugly cry
Charlotte,
for me.
Charlotte's Web my gosh. Is a spider. I will never be sad when a spider dies.
In real life, no. But it's still like, I was 8, so you must have been
6.
Yeah. And maybe even younger. When we used to go once a week to get some kind of movie, I would always get like The Last Unicorn and or Charlotte's Web.
Days before Blockbuster.
Oh, yeah. Like down by the corner.
Yeah.
On the corner.
You could actually rent a Betamax player.
And so I would literally rent Charlotte's Web. I would watch it with a blanket to like hide under with just my eyeballs peeping out to see it and then be able to curl up with a blanket and cry. I would watch it on purpose, knowing I was going to cry at like 8. So this Lisa T will commiserate with me. We've kind of tweeted about this on Twitter, which is a little bit redundant, but we've tweeted about this together. I am a masochist, apparently. I like sad stuff, not in life, but in art, I guess. And I'll go back 10 times and cry even harder and love it.
Okay, which also, first of all, your face was hella scary right there.
I know.
Secondly,
I could feel it. It was scaring me.
Secondly, I would also like to point out that you were also a bit of a sadist because you made me sit through all of those movies and watch you cry and be affected. So
it's they're calling me BJR?
Sure.
No.
No. Yeah, I would say that you're into both. So that makes you into like.
Well, he's a B.
Is that like.
He's both.
So now you're like S&M?
No, I guess he's a sadist. He's not a masochist. He's
are
a
you?
Sadist, right?
So you're like an S&M person?
Summer.
You're into S&M?
No,
S
never.
And M. Sadomasochism.
Oh my gosh. Okay, next topic. Next up is Kathy.
Hi, this is Kathy calling again from Northern Colorado. I just have a few comments. One, I really feel that 13 episodes is not enough. I wish there were more time for more character development. And secondly, of course, I love the episode. I think it was really well done. There were a couple of things that bothered me. One of them was, as I think a lot of people probably noticed, I really didn't like Jamie's beard. It was not very good. And secondly, the grave marker for an 18th century grave marker in a Parisian cemetery would be a lot less significant, and the designs on that and the granite, et cetera, looks like it was made in kind of the local grave marker store out in the country. Is kind of surprising considering how much time they've spent on authenticity. But anyway, they're just minor things, although the beard was pretty funny. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I have heard a lot of people talk about the beard.
That beard, I called it, and I'm not saying I'm the only one who said it, but my first thought was bush. It was a bushy beard. Come on. It was, that's all I can say without saying anything a little more crass. It was bushy beard. Or no, sorry, it was bush beard.
So you're saying it was like
bush.
Puby.
I am not saying that. I am saying bush. Go with it where you will.
Okay.
But yeah, Kathy, I don't think we were huge fans of the bush, of the beard. I don't think
she
we were
huge fans. She prefers him hairless.
I don't think we were huge. No, I actually like beards. Apparently over the last like 2 years or so, maybe because of Outlander, the beard's been growing on me. Not literally. I
maybe
do
you
not
should
have
shave
a beard
that.
Summer.
I've been meaning to say something.
Look. Yes, people, that's the real reason we don't do video podcasts, because Ginger doesn't shave enough.
She surely doesn't.
I surely doesn't.
She surely doesn't.
But yeah, the beard was interesting. The gravestone, I mean, I thought it was beautiful, but I haven't done any research on anything about the gravestone. So I thought that scene was beautiful. But again, I'm absolutely no expert about that sort of stuff. And our final piece of listener feedback comes from Booth.
Hey, Ginger and Summer. I hope I'm actually catching you before the cutoff. This is Booth from Nashville, and I actually was going to call and give you my thoughts on episode 207 entitled Faith. I read book 2 quite some time ago. It's probably been almost a year now, maybe even a year and a half. And so much has happened since then in all of the other books that I don't remember a ton about Dragonfire Amber. And so I didn't really know what they were going to do with this episode. And I have to tell you that for me, I just love Outlander, and I've loved the majority of all of the work that they've put out as a show. But this episode had really special resonance for me. In 2007, my husband and I found out that I was pregnant with our second child, and she had a genetic abnormality, a chromosomal abnormality, which was called trisomy 18. And usually it ends in miscarriage, but I carried her to 39 weeks, and then we delivered her, and she lived for 8 days. And some children live longer, and some children live literally for a couple of hours outside of the womb, so we didn't really know what we were walking into. But I have to tell you that in that experience, there were a couple of moments that, for me, as I look back, sometimes without really wanting to, but as I look back, I remember two moments most particularly. The first one was when I held her, my daughter's body. I held onto her body all day long. She died kind of in the late afternoon, and I didn't have to give her up until about 10 o'clock that night. And as I look back on that, I think I'm sure people thought that was weird, but I just wanted to hold her. And the second moment for me was the moment that they took her body away. And I think as a mom, that there's nothing more horrible than to have to give up your child's body. Because honestly, it's completely unnatural. And I think what Outlander did in their treatment of that, by including Louise and allowing her to be the person that, you know, in her way of saying, can I hold her? And then, Claire being fully aware that, okay, by giving my baby's body to Louise, this is not me allowing her to hold my baby. And then, you know, as a normal mother would have the baby returned, I'm giving this baby up and I'm going to give her up to the grave. I'm giving her up to the ground. And yet the vehicle by which that's going to happen is that I get to give her to someone who, within the context of Paris, is really my only true friend. And I found that to be so beautiful. And I don't remember it in the book. I don't think that that happens in the book, but I tweeted everyone I could think of when it happened, because I wanted Katrina especially to know that for me as a mom, it was just the most precious thing to see her portray a mother grieving in that way, and to be so authentic and so sincere in her portrayal of that. And for Claire Sermon, who plays Louise, I just was really moved by her ability to come to that scene with so few lines. And I know she's only on the screen for a few minutes, and yet she just brought such gravity to that moment. And it really, really honored, I feel like, the mothers out there who have lost children. So I'm sorry for the lengthiness of this call, but I did feel like it was important for me to call and just give my perspective as a mom who's gone through loss. So thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Booth, for sharing that with us. You hit the nail on the head. Now, Summer and I haven't been through, of course, anything like you have or the character of Claire has, but I believe I have read and heard so much in the last week about how, you know, Outlander has been called groundbreaking in a few different areas, right? You know, told from a feminine perspective, you know, that the female gaze, all of that. But something that, as heartbreaking as it was, something that I've heard a number of times now for 207 is that it pretty realistically, it's fiction, but it showed, it honored that journey that moms who miscarry, and specifically miscarry stillborns, because that's just not depicted anywhere. That's just not depicted. And so
I've seen it on Grey's Anatomy, but
yeah, that's true.
But after 12 years, they pretty much have to do.
They've done everything. Yeah. So Booth, you know, bless you for what you've gone through. I'm so sorry for your loss, but thank you for reaching out to us and letting us know how this touched you, because absolutely, Claire, of course, Claire, Katrina did an outstanding job, but Claire Sermon, I agree, with such little screen time and with like one or three lines, I think. One of the best, I think the most heartbreaking line of the entire episode, which I'm going to say was the best episode of both seasons thus far.
I would agree with that.
And again, Tony, we love you.
She'll never call back if you keep doing that.
Don't tell her then. But Tony Graffi, our favorite writer. But my favorite line, and then Summer will go on. My favorite line is when she says, "It's time, ma chère."
Okay, and to answer Booth's question or her statement, whatever, however we want to pose that, she is not in that scene in the Abbey. She does come to visit her in the Abbey, and she does take her away from the Abbey. So, and she takes her off to, where does she take her? Argentan?
Oh, no,
Fontainebleau.
Fontainebleau.
So she takes her off to this estate and basically does her healing there. And I think that they kind of allowed for that, being, you know, well, she helped her heal in the books by taking her away from the Abbey and, you know, to heal mm-hmm. from the baby. But they couldn't show that because that didn't happen in the series. So I think that they honored that part of the book by having her come and be part of Claire's healing there in the Abbey. That's how I took it.
So thank you again, Booth. That was very, we're very humbled and honored that you would share that with us, share your story with us, because that's this show, our favorite show, so we're biased, but this show hits so many people in so many ways and does so much right. Does so much right.
And now on to our episode discussion for episode 208, entitled The Fox's Lair.
Subtitle, It gonna be sweaty up in here.
Subtitled, the shark has been jumped.
Okay,
Sean Connery.
My point is, I think I said this before, it's not like high summer where it's like 110 degrees in the day, but it's warm enough. We can't turn the AC on when we record, and so we sweat in all the places.
Speak
so
for yourself.
I'm trying to not sweat in all the places. So, opening credits have been updated.
They have. Bye-bye, friends. Hello, Roger, okay. Perhaps. So, Roger and Bree.
A long time ago. Oh, hold on. That's a little bit ahead, but almost. Okay. So, I don't know if I've... No, I think I've mentioned it before, but I totally forgot it because I never took notes on what I thought I wanted to sing. But if I sing along with opening credits, part of it, even though I know the song, my brain wants to go in one direction of like singing different lyrics, but I never wrote it down. And tonight I was singing along, watching for this updated credits because I had heard that they were different. So I was like, oh, I got to see it. I was singing along while I was waiting for the change in the credits. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I say. So right when it goes, mountains of rain and sun, I want to say, mountains of curds and whey.
Who would want a mountain of that?
I don't know. But it's just like, it's the way it is.
So along came a spider that sat down beside her?
Eating her curds and whey. Yes. So now that that's been settled.
Well, here's what I want to say about the new title. One of the first things I want to say about the new title. So I rarely, after we've had the same title sequence for the last, eight, seven episodes, I've started to walk away while the titles are on because I've seen them. I don't need to look at them again. So I'd walked into the kitchen to get something else, and all of a sudden, I heard quite audibly that she was no longer singing French. So I had to run back in and rewind it and start it over again because I was like, this is different. There's something different. And I was like, first of all...
Is it back to the first years?
No, it's not. It's back to the... I think the lyric is the same, if that's what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
The title images are completely different. So they got rid of France, and they've put in... allusions to the 1950s, 1960s, like that kind of era. And there's also lots of lead up to Culloden. Lots of half-naked running Scots.
Yeah, let's go there. So it appears that the visuals changed just around the time of not curds and whey, but mountains of rain and sun. It looks like people, soldiers, are creeping up a hill. And then we see only hands, but soldiers or someone in some kind of military is looking at some battle plans on a model. You see the salt here, the Scottish flag. You mm-hmm. see the British flag or the government flag. And then you see Scottish soldiers marching. Well, they're marching under a Scottish banner because, as we know from Dr. Darren Lane, those who fought against the government were not completely made up of Scots. So you can't just say the Scottish.
Did you not notice the car? It's in the first, like...
Nope, I did this in order. And then when it goes... All that was good. Claire's driving in a car. And you see Lallybroch in the distance, the ruin.
You missed the first car then.
There's two cars?
Yeah, it's the same car. But they show the car parked and two people walking at peninsula, a little outcropping of land into water. I'm thinking...
Is it Hare or is it Claire?
They're so far away that you can't tell. But I think it's Roger and Bree.
I have to go back and watch that. I'm a little bit
And I cannot verify... Who is inside of the car when the car is driving?
Of course not, because all you see is Claire from the back.
But it might not be Claire. It could be Claire. But it could also... I haven't seen how they've dolled up Sophie Skelton.
Yeah, but the hair's up. I don't think...
Was it up? It was super curly. But I don't think that Brianna would have been driving.
No, I think Claire would have been driving.
Yeah. And it was driving. So it was probably Claire. So who's with Claire?
It looked like her profile or her three-quarter profile or whatever in her hair. But yeah, exactly. Who's in the back seat? Because there's no one in the seat next to her, I don't think. You see Lallybroch in the distance. I wrote, you know what that means. And we can't say.
I'm sorry. Were there actual music notes in your notes?
No, this wasn't me. Girl, look, who are you talking to? That's the stupidest, silliest
and
question
I wrote,
ever.
Look, what does that mean? I didn't realize that you wrote all of that.
I see what you're saying. I was like, do you have to ask me that question? But I see what you mean. So, and then on All That Was Fair. And then it returns to Claire. I think, definitely in the 18th century, she's stitching. And she's then from season one, running through the woods. And then they show us the stag from season one. And then back to the dancing druids. And then, but no, it's a red coat on a white horse. And then potatoes, which we know are from this episode, 208. Tatties. When they're at Lallybroch and they're bringing in the potato harvest. And then we see soldiers raising their swords, pitchforks, etc. in the air in front of something burning, like a bonfire or something maybe. And then we see running Scots in their kilts, bare-chested. And I swear that front one is Jamie. It just looks like Sam's chest. Not that I know a lot about it, but we've seen a lot of Sam's chest in the show. And because there's no heads, there's no faces. And then redcoats are aiming guns.
Headless Scotsman.
Oh, well, yeah. And then we see a line of redcoats aiming their guns and firing. And then it closes with hand-to-hand combat. Then there's some very brief glimpse of some lovey-dovey time between Jamie and Claire. And then the dancing druid again. And then it closes, as before, with the two on horseback riding off to Leatherrock across that glen that was in 112 right after they escaped the witch trial.
I believe so.
So there you go. And if we missed anything, like, we just knew. We just found out in front of y'all. I just found out in front of y'all that I missed something. So I got to go back and watch it again. So if we missed anything together, let us know. Now we're to the opening title.
I want a fox.
It was a little bit like of a battered fox. I mean, he didn't look like pristine.
It looked like an old fox.
Exactly.
I'll take an old fox.
And it was a long look at a fox. I mean, that was like that fox was there for like a long time.
Yeah. It was the title card. That was it.
That was it.
They just showed a fox sitting there chilling.
Of course, this stands for Simon the Old Fox. And it's in front of some bluebells, which reminds me of our magical shot taken last year at Kilmartin Glen. Did you see those flowers? Oh my gosh.
I love those flowers. So pretty.
No, I mean, did you see the ones behind the fox?
I'm sorry. I was looking at the fox.
Oh, okay.
I was like staring at it.
I forgive you.
Thinking, I want one.
And then, of course, even though we knew it, they have to place us now in Scotland. And they did that with their opening shots. And I put all in caps. And we're back in Scotland.
Not for long. Don't get comfortable, people.
We're not going anywhere but Scotland.
We're not going to say Lollybrock, though.
That's not what I said. I said Scotland. Then Leatherrock. Another baby for Jenny and Ian. Now, they don't tell us the name. I know there's in the book. It was a girl, right?
I think this time? I'm fairly sure its name. I'm fairly sure her name is Katrina. Because
I think you're right.
In the scene later on, he says Katrina.
And Margaret was the one she had before.
Oui, Maggie.
Yeah, Maggie. And then when they do their shots of the outside, we see the mill. I wonder if that's Preston Mill.
It seemed like it was Old Home Week. They're like, let's just hit all the places we went to. And I'm like,
to prove that we're at Leatherrock.
Yeah, we're back. We're back, people.
And then they're harvesting potatoes. And I wrote, they started into making me think they'd have some sort of cookout, like in the book, when mm-hmm. they did the harvest and then had the cookout and everyone's out. There was like the last night before the shizzle hit the fan, right? Like the old world, before the old world came new, was changing. They had all those things. Remember, Ian had those glasses. We talked about those different things from the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see it through, but that's okay.
It was an allusion to that.
Yes, because they were going to cook them that night. We just never saw them do it, but right. It's all good.
To me, this episode felt like, how much stuff can we push into one episode to make room for stuff later?
How many times have we heard
that
this entire season?
I know, but this one was very apparent to me because there were people in places they didn't belong.
That's a different...
I know.
We'll get there.
But some of the things I'm like, okay, well, I can see why they added so-and-so to the scene, because if they put it out later, that would just be one extra whatever, and they're trying to condense it and get everything done all at the same time.
Once the action starts, they don't want to go away from it.
Exactly. I think. So I get that.
Okay, so whenever I see Leatherrock, the facade of Leatherrock, I remember sitting on those steps and taking our threesome selfie. Remember that?
I do.
So much fun. We
had to
share
remember
that again.
Hopton House.
Oh, gosh. With our hair that was just flying everywhere.
Well, it was so windy.
When was it not windy? So they discuss how to cook tatties.
And of course, Fergus is still the expert.
Oh my gosh, Fergus. And that was from the book too.
Yep.
I'm sure. So Summer, what's your favorite way to eat potatoes? If there were no carbs in them, but they tasted the same, what's your favorite way to make them?
It's a toss up. I would have to say, and I'm a little disappointed Fergus didn't suggest this, French fries.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's funny.
Okay. I know for a fact.
What would you dip them in?
They call them pommes frites, first of all. But I think they started in like Holland or someplace else.
Oh, that would make sense.
They were not originally from France, so I'm giving them an excuse, but I thought
it would
be funny.
What do you dip your pommes frites in? Mayo?
No.
Oh,
that's,
my gosh.
I have.
Mustard?
I don't. It would be like ketchup.
Ketchup
a special
works.
Place
I love,
for ketchup.
But mayo. I think it's like a Hollandish. I think it's kind of a Dutch thing. I've heard that
mayo,
the Dutch
yeah.
do mayo and mm-hmm. yeah.
So but good. It's a toss-up because I also do love mashed potatoes and gravy.
Good Lord.
With the right gravy.
Oh my gosh. So Ian.
What's yours?
Oh gosh. I think honestly, I mean, I do love a good jacket potato.
I do need to also say that and specify that when I say French fry, I want McDonald's French fries.
Oh, not the crisp cut. I mean, the crinkly.
No,
long skinny.
I like the long skinny ones because they're always crisp.
Yeah.
because the bigger steak fries, like chips, tend to
get soggy
real fast.
Yeah.
Whereas the McDonald's French fries tend to,
especially if they're fresh, a little longer. If they're fresh.
Almost any potato in a fresh,
crispy
way,
not burned.
I'm cool with that.
I do like them that way too. But I like a good jacket potato for all those things you can put on it.
But then that to me says it's more about the things you're putting on it as opposed to the potato.
Oh, but potatoes au gratin.
Oh, that's good. I make a mean potato au gratin.
You have to do that again because dad used to make it.
Get the mandolin slicer.
I think it was from the box.
I've made it from scratch, my friend. And
you mean your sis?
You don't want to be my friend?
I mean,
we're not friends.
We're sisters first.
I'll remember that.
I didn't say we're friends. We're sisters first.
She's publicly said she does not want to be my friend.
I never said that. And guess what? It's on record. I never said it. Okay, so Ian arrives with the post. Jamie has a letter with a royal seal. Claire gets mail from Louise.
No, it was not the royal seal at first.
No, on the
outside. Yeah, but he didn't see that at first until he opened it.
It's in there. Claire gets mail from Louise, and Jenny mentions Aunt Jocasta. Now, okay, I wrote, they're setting us up nicely for future seasons.
If they'll announce them, please.
Well, that too. But I really can't say much more than that, because at this point, no matter what the future may hold, Aunt Jocasta is in Scotland. So Jenny gets mail from Paris. Was that from Jared? I think in the books it was from Jared. Was Jared back and who sent the books? It was from Paris.
Aunt Jocasta. I thought that was part of the whole thing from Aunt Jocasta.
So Jocasta's in Paris?
I don't know, but just because she's in Paris, not in Paris, wherever she is, doesn't mean she doesn't have access to French books.
Okay. So that was my question. I don't know if they, I know there was mail. I never heard the name Jared mentioned, except for our listener feedback. I never heard the name Jared mentioned by them, but he's the only one that we know for a fact.
Well, he did say my uncle
stays in. Oh, who did?
Jamie did when he was reading the letter.
Oh, I'm sorry. That letter was from Jared.
Yeah.
Duh. Okay. That letter was from Jared and something came from Jocasta and
I mean, I don't think that they specified actually who the books came from.
Me either.
I just assumed that
except
because
she
gave
Paris.
The letter.
That's what I thought. Now, Jamie freaks out at the window. I wrote, I wonder what's in the letter. Jared is praising Jamie for his courage in that letter, and enclosed with the letter is perhaps not a broadsheet like in the book, but it's something that does the same job. It lists people who are supporting the Stuart cause, and Jamie's signature is among them, and it is forged. The prince, we find out, has landed in Scotland and is gathering an army. Jamie is now a traitor to the crown, so there's officially no more choice. Claire says, though, that they could go to Ireland or to the colonies, and Jamie actually puts it correctly. He's like, well, no, actually, we couldn't. We can't take everyone with us, and we would have to take everyone to be safe. Anyone who is left behind could be in trouble. And he says, quote, Paris was bitter disappointment, unquote.
Now, you're speaking of the scene where they're outside talking,
yes.
Right? Okay. Did you notice his hair? It looked a lot shorter. It looked like he'd gotten a haircut. And then every other scene in this episode, it was long again.
Maybe it was a pickup?
It was weird. Definitely noticed it. And then...
Maybe it shrinks when it's cold.
Maybe it does. Who is Thomas Baxter?
I have no idea.
Exactly. He mentions, you know, and they're talking about, have you given up trying to change the future? And she was like, well, we saw how it worked in Paris. And he was like, yeah, but Thomas Baxter's alive. And...
Ah,
and da 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 da
okay,
da.
Yeah. So
and Louise is going to have a baby.
So he was listing things that changed or whatever since because she was there, she was involved. So he mentioned
specifically Thomas Baxter.
So Jamie says he still wants to try and change the future. He points out the way she's already changed the future, Louise's baby, and the smallpox epidemic that was thwarted. So Thomas Baxter must have been someone she healed.
Must have been, but I don't recall us ever being introduced to Thomas Baxter, which is why
someone by name.
I was hung up on
confused.
That for like the rest of that scene. I was like, wait, what else did she do? Because I'm too busy trying to remember who Thomas Baxter was.
So they start gathering their own men. They count off like they do in the book of how many men they can bring from Lallybroch. But before they go to join the prince, Jamie and Claire will be visiting Simon Fraser of Lovett, their grandsire. His grandsire.
Now, they mention in this episode that Lord Lovett tried to kidnap his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen in the book? I don't remember that.
I don't think so.
I remember Brian and her running away together to make sure that she was pregnant before they came back so that they couldn't stop the wedding, basically. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember them attempting to kidnap the mom.
I don't remember that.
Okay. Thank you.
That's doesn't it. Mean it didn't happen, but I don't remember
No, okay. That's all I need.
So they're going to him to ask for men and to support the king, or the prince, to get the king out there. So he's someone, of course, we know this from history and from reading the books, Simon is, who plays both sides. Lovett wasn't a fan of Jamie's father marrying his mother, Ellen Mackenzie, so they are going to go to Beaufort Castle. But Jamie tells Claire later that night that his father was a bastard, and he still carries this. This is a heavy weight for him, and this is also in the book. And it's a burden for him, and he does think it's not good. He's affected by it still. He tells Claire, quote, "I should have told you before we wed." And she's like, "Jamie, you really think this matters to me?" And then when they finally stop talking and he picks her up and kisses her, and then I just wrote, holy mashmokey, the way he picks her up and just takes her to the bed. Oh my.
It was way more dashing than the king's.
Oh my goodness.
Escorting her
I don't
to bed.
Know. Yeah. I was starting to have thoughts about Jamie instead of Tobias. I mean, BJR. So Claire wakes up in the middle of the night and Jamie is gone. And she goes out of the room and sees him cuddling his new niece. And he's talking to her in Gaelic, of course. Jenny comes out and talks to Claire. I love this dialogue. She says that they keep each other company, Jamie and the baby. And I love the conversation. I love this conversation in the book. And I know it's not identical, but it's the sense of the scene. And it's very poignant because, of course, Claire having just lost, and Jamie just having lost a baby, and now he's totally cuddling with one and talking to it. And then what Jenny says about how they comfort each other and how it's different when women are carrying them. And she gives a nod to Claire when she says,
you know
what I'm talking about, because it doesn't matter that she lost her. She had her. And then she says it's different for men who have to wait and then all that stuff. So that the sense of it, it's a very, very, very good reflection of the book. It's not identical, because in the book, when she says you have these dreams and hopes and everything about what it could be, she says the mom, you, meaning her.
And then when you have
mourn,
the baby.
You yeah. mourn what's lost or what you mourn what could have been.
Well, because you don't fall know, in love but with because it. Beforehand you don't know if it's a boy or a girl. So when you yes. have the baby, if you have a little girl, you mourn the loss of the male child
yes.
that you might have had.
And so in the book, it's about, and I mean, not she didn't exclude the dad, I don't think, but she was specifically talking about the mom because it's unknown and you're carrying it. In the show, it's completely the dad's when it comes out.
Right.
So it's a change, but they kept the essence of it. So that was great.
Right. Two things. One, Faith's theme played in this scene.
I know.
Two, the one thing that I missed in this scene that was in the book was, in the book, he's cradling this baby in the hallway, like as he was in the episode, and talking to her in Gaelic and weeping.
And you just reminded me of what the chapter is called in the book, Moonlight.
Yes.
Because he's in a window or something.
He's always in a window.
Jimmy in the window. That's true.
But he just was sitting there pouring his heart out to this baby and just, you know, softly, clearly, but just like weeping while holding this child. So I was kind of hoping they were going to do that. They didn't. And it was still a really beautiful scene, but I did miss it.
So the next day, they finally, or soon after, they do leave for Beaufort Castle. And Jenny gives Jamie a rosary that brought Ian back from France. She says, "If you don't come back, brother, I'll never forgive you."
And he says, "Never is a very long time."
Long time. And then I lost my shizzle when Fergus came in on a mule. I mean, on a donkey. On a mule?
That was a donkey.
Good Lord.
Donkeys are smaller.
There's a reason I didn't become a vet.
I think it was a donkey.
I think it was a donkey. It was like a Jesus, but not.
It was like a Jesus?
Jesus came riding in on Palm Sunday on a donkey.
Okay.
Jamie tells Claire, on the way to the castle, they have like hours and hours and hours of travel time. Jamie tells Claire everything he knew about his grandfather. Okay, so I'm going to let Summer start the next little bit because Summer's got words.
And I didn't write them all down because my hand started to cramp. But like I said earlier, I believe that the shark has been jumped. I think that Diana was very right. We would know when we saw it. And I saw it.
I was so much confused by so much.
Well, for me, shark jump number one, because I thought there were two. No, there was more than two, actually. But the first one that came to mind was Colm being at the old fox's lair at his house. He never in the books goes anywhere near that. And most of the conversations that he has with Jamie and Claire happen, I believe, in where are they in the book? Is it Edinburgh where they are in the book?
Jamie and Claire?
Yeah. But
with the
city. Yeah. The city that they're.
Where he's stationed. Edinburgh. Yes.
Okay. That's what I was saying. Edinburgh. So most of the conversations with Colm happen in Edinburgh. Like he shows up and they go out and sit in a graveyard or a church or something in there and they have this whole conversation and he asks them basically, should I do this? Should I not do this? And they tell him, take your men and go home. You don't want to fight in this. Whereas in this one, it was Colm saying, we shouldn't do this. I don't want to fight in this. Let's all sign the statement of neutrality, which was so Hamilton for me. And fighting it, and then Jamie doing the exact opposite, trying to convince him to go. So that was strange for me. Two, leg hair.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Okay, we'll have to dive into that because there is so much holy mandoki. Okay, so they get to Beaufort Castle. Now, like in the book, they have no chance to freshen up before they go meet.
That was true.
Lord Lovett. So that was cool. That was outside in like the outside area, but it doesn't matter to me. It's cool, whatever. Adaptation.
They even got the thing with the stuff in her hair.
Yeah, exactly. And then who comes around the corner? But freaking Colm.
But not Simon Lovett.
No, Colm first.
Yeah.
So this is where begin to go mightily different.
Took a hard left.
He's there to, quote, discuss a response to the rebellion with Lord Lovett. And I thought, okay. So this brings up, without going any further and without spoiling the book or the series, because we don't know how they're going to carry forward. This gives me, because here's the thing. By the end of this episode, it's the effect of what the old fox does is similar enough to the books.
Right. We're back on track near the end of the episode.
Exactly. But with all the stuff about Colm, it makes me wonder if we're going to get the thing that, if they're going to handle Colm the way they handled it in the book. She handled it in the book.
I think that I feel like
it could.
They threw him in there to not use him later. That's the only thing I can take from it. Because they're not going to do that whole scene all over again.
So Colm is dealing with Lord I'll say this because I think I agree with you. Colm is dealing with Lord Lovett rather than the prince.
At this point. I mean.
Well, at this point, yes. I'm saying, are you saying that you believe, since they did so much with him right now, they're likely not going to have him come and do more? Because the whole point, we'll just put it out there. The whole point in the book of having Colm come to Edinburgh and meet with the prince was to say, because of course the prince wants men, and he was there representing his men, and he was basically saying, it's, well, and Dougal was there, wasn't he?
Dougal was
there. Yeah, he was there. He helped him get up that hill. But he said, basically, we're going to stay out of it. My men will not fight. You know, like
and
he did
was,
here.
And that was after, but that was after he had his little conference with Jamie and Claire. He was like, what should I do?
Well, yeah, but I'm not even talking about the conference. Right. Just the end. He's like, we're not going to fight. I'm the laird, and that's how it is. And then something happens, and then something happens. So I won't say that, but.
Well, I imagine that something happening, one of those somethings that happened, is still going to happen because they have to be there. So.
Who has to be where?
Dougal.
Jamie and Claire?
Dougal.
Oh, you mean when they
the
fight?
The Mackenzies have to be there.
Oh, yeah.
It's historically accurate that the Mackenzies are there. They have to be there.
Some Mackenzies. There's more Mackenzies than the Mackenzies of Leah, and Leah's not a real place.
I know, but it would be, I think the Mackenzies have to be there.
So Claire,
especially since Dougal was working so hard to raise the money last season to support this uprising in the first place.
So after seeing Dougal, or at seeing Dougal, Claire brings up the witch trial. Dougal says he basically had nothing to do with it. He had Leary beaten for her role, but she was spared for being kicked out totally by her grandmother, Mrs. Fitz. Dougal stayed back at his own estate, so he's not here on this trip.
No, and Book Colm was way harsher than Show Colm, because Book Colm not only had her beaten, he then married her off to a man who would then beat her all the time.
Yes. So old Simon starts off with insulting Claire's Englishness. And then the three men pretty soon start to talk politics. Claire leaves and walks around the castle and runs into Leary. And that's,
you know,
another change.
And what I don't understand is how is that not something that Colm should have mentioned? Not only
that Leary was there.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Not only, you know, did I have her beaten and I took care of that and she was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but BT dubs. I brought her here. She's taking care of my laundry. You're going to see her. It's going to be weird and awkward, but, you know, heads up.
So Leary wants to apologize to Claire. She says that she's changed. Claire says something potentially dangerous. Quote, I don't hate you. I pity you. For doing something in hopes of getting something, meaning Jamie,
you'll never have. Dun, dun, dun.
So Claire goes straight to the Jamie elephant in the room. She says she can't help her. Of course, Jamie is upset. And I wrote, doesn't this prove that he knew of Leary's role in her near burning? Because this entire episode, she's like, Jamie this, Jamie that, Jamie this, Jamie that. And he'll never forgive you or whatever. Or at the end, she holds it over his head. Is like, look, if you help me out, I'll get him to talk to you.
Well, this goes back to what we spoke of. Because you and I were back and forth. Yeah.
We thought we knew that he knew by the end of 112 that she was somehow involved.
Right.
And then we got a few people saying we were wrong. And I just, full disclosure, have not had the time or made the time, to be fair, to go back and watch and make sure that I was right or wrong. But this is a whole half of an episode or more where they're both talking about Jamie. Claire's like, he'll never forgive you. Well, for what? Unless he knew. And Leary's like, he'll never forgive me.
He even says so. And not only that, but the scene between Colm and Jamie and Claire, when she says, your kitchen maid sent me there.
Right in front of
and
her.
He goes, she overstepped. I had her beaten. They were all sitting there. They all know she was part of it.
So the jury's out. The jury's back. Jamie knows. Which is also different. Was different from last year. So dinner at the castle. What do you think about young Simon?
He's very different from the books. In the books, he was an a-hole. And in the show, he's more of a poet. An anemic poet. But
an anemic poet. That's funny.
He does. He looks like he needs some iron in his life.
So Jamie says, quote, after three uprisings, this one coming up will be the third, the British will be motivated to putting us down for good. So he says they must fight and win, because he's basically saying right there, if we don't win, we're not just losing, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Colm asks Jamie how much support the French had promised. Jamie roundabout says, he points out that the French fighting the British in Flanders reduces the troops at home. So, not really an answer, but a roundabout answer.
He was like a stand-up comedian trying to give his best, like, 5-minute set with a heckler. Like, a really bad heckler who was ruining all of his jokes.
That would be a good heckler.
I guess.
But the French, we come to find out, which we already knew, have not yet truly committed. Jamie says they don't need it, though. Jamie, don't be stupid. You need it. I mean, he doesn't know it, but you need it, money-wise. A young Simon is making eyes at Leary, and young Simon says, if I remember correctly, the British had offered £30,000 for the capture of Prince Charles, correct?
Yes.
And old Simon is quite rude to his son. He's like, why would they fight? It would cost them a lot more money to fight a battle, a war, a rebellion, than it would be to just
turn him pay in and someone take 30,000.
Yeah. So Colm wants Levitt's clan to stay neutral with the Mackenzies, knowing that the smaller clans would follow them and stay neutral. The rebellion would collapse before it ever gets started. Later that night, Jamie and Claire are alone. Jamie points out that old Simon could have told them no that night. But now he thinks Jenny may have been right. He wants something in exchange for what they're asking for.
Yes. So did you, I guess one of the things I didn't miss in the adaptation was the inclusion of the old fox's prostatitis.
Oh my gosh. You know they were never going to do it. Or his aw, I didn't miss that, but I did miss the teeth.
That's true. I forgot about the teeth.
They were funny.
But instead of throwing his teeth in the fire, he threw the wine bottle into the fire.
Jamie did that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Jamie did the teeth in the book, too. The next day at the castle, Claire sees Mesri, Simon Seer, being thrown out of his room. Now, this is like directly from the book. Now, in the book, though, she's a young, willowy woman. And here, they made her older. And Simon calls her, quote, old hag. Now, that's unfortunate. I wonder if they did this because the old hag is an archetype for a crone, like a witch kind of thing. You think of oldish woman, at least in Hollywood. Or is it because Claire is tall and willowy and they didn't want to compete for the look? I have no idea. Again, it doesn't matter, but I did recognize a difference. Now, Maisery runs away before Claire can chat Seer to Seer. Old Simon is still bitter about Brian choosing Ellen over him. Dang it. First, when he wed her, and then when he chose her memory and to stay at Lallybroch after she died.
Super bitter.
It's bitter. Simon asks Jamie if it is true he hadn't pledged fealty to Colm. And then Jamie realizes, bingo, he wants Jamie's fealty in exchange for sending men to support Charles. But he's more interested in what goes with it. Lallybroch. And he has an interesting answer. When Jamie says, what do you do with it? What do you want to do with it? He says, what I do with that damnable place would be no concern of yours. I'm your grandsire and head of your clan after all. I demand my due. Jamie replies, why would I give it to an old twister who may or may not share my blood? And like, I gotta look that word. I didn't look it up, but I would like to one day. Mm-hmm. Sounded funny. I want to start using that word. You old twister. Probably not very kind. Simon likes this one. He laughs and he says, quote, implying your grandmother's a whore to keep what you want? Aye. You're my kin, all right.
Yep.
Sounds like it. And then he switches it up. If not Lallybroch for the men, then Lallybroch for Claire's honor. Jamie pulls the whole La Dame Blanche routine. A white lady. A man that takes her in unholy embrace will have his privates burst like a frostbitten apple.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, and then you'll burn forever. And then I thought to myself, has he not been paying attention? I don't think he gives a damn about what happens to his immortal soul. He's an a-hole, and he's been doing nothing but hurt other people forever. He doesn't care about his immortal soul.
Except he does, he has respect, a healthy fear, whatever, of otherworldly stuff. I mean, he has a seer.
He's not interested in dying today.
No.
But I don't think he cares what happens after.
After today?
Yeah. No, what happens after he's dead.
Ah.
Like, what happens to his soul
after
he... So
he's only protecting his privates then.
Yes.
So back in their bedroom, he tells Claire about Simon wanting her, and he tells her to just be careful, watch out. Jamie's seriously considering giving over Lallybroch, and this is also a different...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lallybroch was never, ever on the table. There was no kind of pact or whatever involved.
No, but he does do the deed of Cecine later. At the end. Like, he finds it when they're all on the road to go meet up with the prince. It's in the documents. The deed of Cecine. He sneaks it in there. He has his lawyer draw it up.
Claire says young Simon might be able to help. And he says, if he can convince his father, he might send troops to protect his son. In the courtyard, Claire approaches Leary, who is sniffing laundry.
Naughty.
She's so not over him. I don't care. It just gets progressively more this episode.
Well, yeah, and she immediately turns around. I didn't do anything to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's so not over him. And the way we know it is Jamie's shirt is when Claire asks, is that Jamie's shirt? She answers, I've done nothing to it. She doesn't say no. Claire doesn't care. She's after something else. She wants Leary to basically play the hoor for young Simon. Leary says, again, she's changed. This is the second time.
Me thinks she doth protest too much.
And she mentions Jamie. Claire says that there may be a way she can forgive her, but that Jamie will never love her. But he might forgive her. Again, if he's to forgive her, we already went over this, but I gotta say it again. If he's to forgive her, he must know that she's involved. Mm. So that's, if you didn't pay attention, like I apparently didn't,
well,
in that first scene.
But let's think about it. It's been, what, 2 years since Cranesmere, probably? I'm sure it's been discussed at some point. On a long carriage ride, on a long boat ride when he's maybe not quite puking his guts up. I'm sure that there's been plenty of time to discuss everything that's led up to Cranesmere. If he didn't know, then he definitely knows now.
Now, Claire's not very nice. When Leary is understandably defensive and insulted about what she believes Claire is asking her to do, Claire says, no, you don't have to give up anything. And besides, it's for Jamie. That's a bit conniving, Claire. It reminds me of the Alex and Mary Claire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one that most people said they didn't like.
Like I said, I don't like Leary in this episode. I don't like her in this season because she's not supposed to be there. She does not belong. Like I said, shark jump number two for me. Number three would be young Simon not being the same type of character at all. But Leary does not belong there. She doesn't belong there. We don't have to deal with her at all in this book. So the fact that they're making her deal with us even sooner, and then the way that they bring her up, I'm like, I was annoyed. I was annoyed by Leary. That night, I can't take anything she does for face value ever. So I don't know. She would not be the person I would entrust.
Jamie tells Colm he knows the rebellion will be a disaster, but can't tell him how he knows. He says they must fight and win. And to remain neutral is to be considered treasonous by whatever side that wins. Colm thinks if they don't engage, they'll be left alone, as they have been in the past. But remember, Jamie said that after this, the Third Rebellion, the British would want to make sure it didn't happen again. It was going to be a wipeout. Jamie's giving them as much information as he can without outing stuff.
Is that where third time's a charm comes from?
I don't think so. Jamie basically says he can't remain neutral, but that he promises to do his best to save those things that are important to them all. Out near the chapel, Leary and Simon happen to meet. Claire leaves them alone and goes to the chapel.
Leary gets tarted up. She takes her hair down, gets rid of her little kerchief around her neck.
Now, the conversation is difficult. I actually kind of felt bad for Leary during this scene. She does try. She says, it's a day. She asks him if he likes mushrooms. He's like, no, not really.
Well,
I mean, they both like poetry. He tries, but it's just not happening. And so they sit down and I just think it's awkward.
It is, but clearly they're both crappy at small talk. She fell back on, how's the weather? It's the weather today is bad. Oh, do you like mushrooms? I mean, there are so many other things other than mushrooms. I mean, was she sitting on a mushroom? Why mushrooms?
She was picking them.
Oh, still.
You didn't hear that?
Nope.
Okay. Claire goes into the chapel and finds Mesri. Slight change from the book. Rather than the priory ruins, it's a chapel, but it's holy-ish, so it still works. Whatever. Mesri comes to the chapel because it is the only place where her mind calms. Now, this I love straight from the book. She gives the story of Lachlan's son and the seaweed.
Yes.
Loved it.
I loved her accent.
Oh, me too.
The way she spoke.
Me too. So if people change their actions, basically, they can avoid disaster, even if a seer sees something. Now, what did she see of Lord Lovett? Quote, a man stood behind him, face covered in black. Across his lordship's face fell the shadow of an axe, unquote. Now, Claire thinks she should tell him, and he might change his mind, but Mesri says, yeah, or he may kill the messenger. And
exactly.
She's very right. She was thrown out of a room for either lying or
for not telling him.
So if she told him, you could only imagine. So Leary, we find out, or I believe, really did try. He didn't seem very talkative, and so she got desperate and showed him her boobs. As you do.
Not really her boobs. She just kind of let him look down. She tried to let him look down. Not like she like whipped her boobs out like she did for Jamie, showed him her boobs.
I didn't say show him the nip.
Okay.
Top of it is still boob. Look, it's still boob. So
I mean,
he apparently
you say show me your boobs, I'm thinking Mardi Gras.
Oh, fair enough. So young Simon runs off. He's very inexperienced with the women's. And I gotta say, this scene, I sympathize with Leary. She truly is, regardless of what she's lying about,
Bert.
Regardless of the fact that she's lying about the whole Jamie thing, she did this for Claire, for herself.
No, she did this for the hope that Jamie will someday forgive her. She did it for herself.
Yeah, she did it to benefit herself in the end, but she did it because Claire asked her to. Because there would be benefits for her. And it's kind of pitiful. She was like, I tried. I really did. I tried. And you feel bad for her because she's like, no, I know I'm not expected to like go have Megan whoopee with this dude. But, you know, make conversation and try and... I kind of didn't get... I can go with the fact that he finds her attractive. I can go with the fact that Claire kind of wanted her to butter him up. Did she want him to... Did she want her to... get her to convince him?
No, she wanted for him to want to show off for her.
To maybe then go to war.
Just be like, you know, I'm going to stand up to my dad. I'm not going to let him treat me like this in front of her. She likes me. I want to do what I can to maintain that in her eyes. I don't want her to see a weakling, man. I want her to see a man.
Yeah, and he just ran away.
So she really just wanted Leary to encourage his infatuation.
That makes sense. So that night at the castle, Jamie's had no joy. Claire tells him what Mesri had seen. And Jamie asks if she'd mentioned if the executioner was working for King George or King James. She didn't know. And she didn't. Well, we were there. She didn't say anything. Jamie doesn't want to go to the prince a failure. So he has decided he'll have to give up Lallybroch.
Boo.
Later that night at dinner, the neutrality pact between the Mackenzies of Leah and the Frasers of Lovett is signed. Also, the deed of sassing for the Lallybroch estate is there, and Jamie now has to choose. Claire is getting ready in the background. Here comes her second fake fortune telling in 3, 2, 1. And what gets me every time, or all two times, is that hand on her head. It's so stupid. It's awesome, but it's so fake. She drops the cup. Jamie's worried. She tells Simon what she saw. Of course, Maisie's vision. So she's a vision stealer.
She is. And it strikes me. And Jamie just played right into it. Because he was doing the same shtick that he did when he was trying to sell her as a white lady. Like, there's a very affected, neither of these two people would be very good actors.
Oh, kind of
like if
the search?
Yes, I feel like.
For her.
These, like, the two characters, like, clearly Sam and Katrina are amazing actors. I'm just saying that the characters of Jamie and the character of Claire are not good actors. Like, it was very obvious that they were putting on this show. For them.
The Jamie is totally, doesn't it look like, yes, he goes along, but doesn't it look like he's in on it?
I
didn't think that they had planned it, because what we saw of them in the bedroom, he was like, I'm going to have to give up Lallybroch. They never talked about her using the speech. Yet, at first he does seem concerned because, like, you know, she fell or was about to fall. She dropped the cup and he's like, Sasnach, you okay? But
I don't think he was in on it from the beginning. I think
he went with it.
Because I don't think that he was 100% sure he was going to sign that document. And I think that the minute that he kind of made that decision and Claire was like, you can't do this. And then she was like,
fine,
F it. I got something. I'm going to do this.
So then he went along with it. The thing that made me think, oh, I wonder if there's a possibility they discussed it beforehand, is after Simon asks, did you see who it was? You know, who did the executioner work for? Same question that Jamie asked. Mm. She says, no, I've forgotten, or I couldn't tell. I think she says, I've forgotten. But then she says that
on the ground,
were white roses. And Jamie, this is what made me think he was in on it. He did not look surprised at all. And he comes out with, yeah, that's the Jacobite sign. I was like, dang. So not that the knowledge that it was a Jacobite symbol was unknown to him. I don't think that must have been common knowledge. But the fact that it's like, oh, Claire, you didn't tell me this part before. You know, so who knows? It's possible they had an offsides conversation that we weren't privy to. So Simon tries to kill Claire. And I wrote, nope. Young Simon stands up and says they must stand up and fight. Old Simon says he's going to remain neutral. And he signs the pact with Colum. The next day, as they're packing to leave, young Simon has decided to join them.
I mean, he pretty much did in front of everyone last night. He has to go now.
Colum and Jamie have a final word at his carriage.
I forget about how bad his legs are until they do a full shot.
Until they help him up in the carriage?
Not even that, before they helped him up, when he was just standing there in front of it. And I thought to myself, his legs look perfect for horseback riding. Why is he riding a carriage?
So what is their final word? The final word is basically goodbye. Besides goodbye, they're just saying... Jamie's like, I got to do this. And Colum is like trying to implore him, or like a be safe nephew kind of thing.
I think he was just kind of like, you know, think about it.
Claire tells Jamie to tell Leary thank you. She like gives him nothing else but that. Go tell that girl thank you. And Jamie says, thank you for what? Not trying to have you arrested in the last few days? Okay. So if you've ever doubted anything until now, Jamie just spouted that. He knows. So hold on to this, dear viewers and dear listeners. Jamie knows right now that Leary had Claire arrested. This is different from the book. Again, fine, not a problem. But what I'm talking about is what I can't say.
How it'll affect future
seasons. But remember
this
and just hold that and don't forget it. That's all. As we go forward, don't forget it. Jamie literally tells her, quote, I'm told to thank you. For what? I didn't ken. Thank you, Leary. Unquote. Now she hopes to one day get his forgiveness. He bows and leaves. And then she says, and your love. See? That's number three. So Leary is not over Jamie. Don't forget this. She's not over him.
I'm over you talking like that.
And they're off. As they ride away, they see all these men lining the top of a hill. It's old Simon's men. Dudes play on both sides, just like
he always does.
He always does. And this is historically accurate. She says, Claire does, that he is somewhat like him. He's somewhat like his grandsire. And Jamie says, I'm not anything like him, am I? And she's like, oh, I noticed some similarities. And he says, I might have to rethink our agreement on not lying to each other.
It's funny. It's almost out of place. It was so funny.
And then as the episode ends, they're marching under the Psalter. On the way, to meet the prince. And there's a question mark hovering above the episode. Is it possible they'd already changed the future? I mean, in little tiny bits of ways, who knows? But
I mean, sorry, she saved Tom Baxter.
We've already seen episode one. So the answer is no.
So something I noticed, I didn't notice it in the interiors, but when they were in the exterior shots with Claire, Jamie, and Lord Lovett, there's a whole lot of butt chins in that scene. Like every last one of them has a butt chin. If Brianna does not come out with a butt chin, there's a problem.
You heard it here first, people. So let us know what you thought of 208 and our discussion of 208. Was it on the mark, off the mark, next to the mark, around the mark? You know, the usual.
I would be interested to hear from our non-book readers how they took the episode, because they clearly don't have the bias that we do towards, you know, how it went down in the book. So, I mean, I want to know from an unbiased person how they felt about the episode. Did it work for them? Did it not work for them? You know what?
I'm almost afraid to ask this because we might get like so much feedback that our episode is just crazy long, but I'll put it out there. This one is especially for book readers. I mean this with all due respect and love from one book reader to another. What the hell did you think?
So clearly we're interested in hearing from everyone what they think. I think both sides are going to be really interesting.
Oh, yeah. So just give us a call.
Oh, but I would like to say this. If that was not the shark jump moment Diana was talking about, I'm going to live in fear.
I'm scared.
I don't know what's wrong with you.
What?
You keep
giving you weird pronunciations?
Yes.
I do it every week, just different words.
No.
So we've made it through another week.
We have.
That's 208, so we only have 5 left. Holy monkeys. And without a green light of season 3 yet, although we're pretty confident, we're hopeful that we get a season 3, but there's no green light yet. And without a green light, there's no filming yet. And without filming, even if we got a green light soon and they hadn't started summer, I don't even know when a season 3 would air next year, because they are not making an April deadline.
No, they're not. But the good thing is it's just going to give us so much more time to do our read along for Voyager.
Oh, shut it. That's true. Okay. So there's the bright...
See? Silver lining.
Side. Thank you. Silver lining. There's a silver lining on that playbook. Sorry. So let us know what you thought. Our number is 916-604-4777. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod, or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.